This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Shaoning with Philip C, and this is The Morning Run. It has just gone past 7.05 in the morning. It's Monday, 1st of March, and in about 15 minutes, the question: can hotels survive until 70% of the population have been vaccinated without interstate travel? Something we'll be finding out with Yap Lip Seng, CEO of Malaysian Association of Hotels. But before that, markets.
Yeah, so we ended last week mostly in the red. In the United States, the Dow closed down 1.5%, S&P 500 closed down 0.5%, while the Nasdaq was up 0.5%. But crossing over to the Pacific and Asia, all markets were down. The Nikkei 225 closed down 4%, Shanghai Composite down 2.1%, Hang Seng down 3.7%, Kospi down 2.8%, Singapore down 0.8%, and back home in KLCA just marginally down 0.2%. A rout.
Yeah, looks like markets are very nervous about the question mark as to whether inflation is rearing its head again. But in the meantime, questions that we will ask Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global. Now, Kingsley, actually, I'm looking at Bloomberg just at this moment, and it's reporting that in Australia, the 10-year sovereign yield has slid by the most in a year on Monday. So, is it the end of good times for equity markets, Kingsley?
No, I don't think so. This is a bit of a mixed story, and what we're seeing here is something that hasn't happened, honestly, for a long, long time, which is a normal cyclical recovery. In the sense of you're seeing rotation in the equity market away from growth to value, and you're also seeing the bonds sell off and a little bit of nervousness about how far that will go in terms of inflation. But net-net, we think it's a positive. It's just that we're going to have to trade this tactically in terms of timing when to move as the bond market goes to and fro, trying to figure out where the new level is.
And in the meantime, there's also been intense speculation that the Reserve Bank of Australia may wade into the market again this week, right, by making an unscheduled purchase of as much as $3 billion of debt on Friday. Do you think they'll do so?
Yeah, I think they probably will. The main reason for this is that, as you know, I mean, they've been messaging continuously about their desire to hold rates down. So far, it hasn't been that effective, I must say, at tenors beyond a couple of years. So when you look further out along the curve at 5 and 10 years, that's where we're seeing the real action in terms of a rise in interest rates. And I think the RBA probably just wants to signal to the market that they're prepared to have a bit of a test and see what happens. Personally, I don't think they'll be that successful in controlling rates at the long end, because this is the cycle speaking now. And we are set, we think, for a good recovery worldwide.
So you remain relatively optimistic on equity markets, but do you think it's prudent for investors to increase their cash holdings in their portfolio?
I think at the margin, what we need to realise is that some of those stocks that worked extremely well during a period of consistently falling rates, especially last year, like the big tech names, they may not be the greatest place to be right now, simply because they're on high PE multiples. And with rising interest rates, the discount rate effect has the effect of reducing the valuations. Conversely, if you look in the metals and commodities and the energy markets and also finance, steep yield curves like we have right now, that means where the long-term interest rate is higher than the short-term interest rate, and that gap is widening, that's generally growth positive. Of course, the bond market gets nervous because bond investors will lose in that scenario if they're holding long duration bonds. They sell those, the stock market reacts later, and then you'll see probably a bit of a settle down where we see markets rise again in equities. And that's the reason why you probably want to sell your growth stocks on rallies, hold it in cash, and buy your value stocks on the dips.
And Kingsley, let's talk about commodities, because, you know, we do see reports that we are facing a super cycle for commodities. The last time we saw one was probably in 2009 with the rise of China. Do you think this time round we are going to see another super cycle?
Yes, that's our view. In fact, I would liken this time in our sort of calendar, if you will. This one's a lot like 2003, where, in fact, you got a big cycle then, bigger even than 2009, simply because there was a big pent-up demand for infrastructure built. And we think we're in a similar situation now, because there's been relatively little capital expenditure post the GFC, Now I think conditions are ripe for that, with the US government flagging that they want to do some infrastructure spend, and also in other parts of the world, not least of all Australia. So I think we're looking at a very strong commodity cycle, a lot like 2003 through 2008.
So how long do you think this super cycle will last?
I think it'll probably go for 3 to 5 years because we're looking at, as I said, capital expenditure. And those sorts of projects from go to woe, as it were, it's usually about 5 years because they're construction projects primarily. And it takes that long to get them moving and get them done.
But one question I have, Kingsley, is because there are, I would say, strained relations between Australia and China, right? So does this impact the commodity market in Australia?
It may do in the longer term. In the immediate future, I don't think so, because the most important thing here is that it takes a long time to bring new mine projects on. And that's why we're seeing strong pricing now, because there had been weak investment hitherto. So although there is this continuing argy-bargy between China and Australia politically, I think the commodities will remain firm. And Australia, if they don't sell directly to China, they'll be selling to somebody who is displacing Australian sales into China. That is to say, into the global market, which will remain strong.
Haven't heard that for ages, argy-bargy. So just shifting from China-Australia to China-US, the Biden administration had issued an executive review of its US supply chain vulnerability to China. What do you think that will impact with respect to trade relations?
I think that that represents a position on the part of the incoming administration that rather than continue the tariff war, I mean, they'll keep the tariffs on, but really I think they're switching to a competitive stance where they want to develop the US economy in ways that it hasn't for a long time, you know, bringing manufacturing onshore and the like. And I think actually that's going to be fairly inflationary, and that's maybe why you're seeing this bond market action right now, because they're going to take production that was in a lower cost area and bring it into a higher cost area. And that's going to happen all around the world. So I think that's what the bond market's kind of reacting to. But I think the timescales for that, they're not immediate, not like we've seen in the trading action. It would probably take 2 to 3 years before we really see any evidence that that is happening and any cost push inflation as a result.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global, giving us his views on the super cycle for commodities that he thinks will last 2 to 3 years, might even be better than what we saw when China boomed in 2009. Probably the better example is 2003. But I don't know, you know, with every time someone predicts it, will it happen? That's the big question, right?
If you recall, I think about 2 weeks ago, we've had different forecasts about how long this super cycle was. Some were saying 5 to 8 years. I think Kingsley's projection is a bit more conservative at 3 to 5 years. But I do bring, I find interesting the executive review as an alternative to this whole trade war that US and China is getting into, and about how US kind of builds its self-sufficiency and not be over-reliant on China across its supply chain. The question is, what can it do it efficiently and at what cost?
And how fast?
Exactly.
Big questions there, right? But moving on to one of the biggest investors in the world is, of course, Warren Buffett. Because over the weekend, Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway said that fourth quarter operating income rose 14% to $5 billion US dollars, aided by improved results from its insurance businesses, while net income rose 23% on year to $36 billion US dollars on the back of soaring prices of stock holdings such as Apple. So Berkshire's Apple investment is worth now $120 billion US dollars, and they only began building a stake in this company in 2016 and just spent $31 billion acquiring it.
Well, I think that places it among the company's top. I confuse country and company there.
Well, the size of 120 billion is a GDP.
I know.
Don't get it wrong, Philip. It
exactly.
is a GDP.
It's a GDP, right? So it places it among the company's top three assets, including its insurance business, and BNSF, the U.S. railroad purchase that they completed in 2010. But for all of 2020, operating income fell 9% to $22 billion, while net income fell 48% to $81 billion. But Berkshire, as usual, repurchased about $9 billion of stock in the quarter, a sign that Buffett considers his conglomerate undervalued.
Yeah, so for all of 2020, Berkshire said it bought back $25 billion of its own stock, topping its old record of $5 billion in 2019. And Berkshire Hathaway shares have trailed the broader market over the last decade and significantly in 2019 and 2020. And even if I look at it this morning on a year-to-date basis, the stock is actually only up 3.73%. But if I do compare that with the broader market, it has outperformed under this very, very short period, because if I look at the S&P 500 as a comparison, that is only up 1.47%. But I think if you look at it from a longer duration, yes, it has underperformed. I think partially due to Berkshire Hathaway's conservatism and reluctance in the first place to join the tech bandwagon. He did so only very, very late
with
in
Apple.
The game. Yeah, and with Apple, he doesn't really put his finger into other tech stocks. He's been still very much old economy. Maybe he has this sense also that, you know, valuations have gone up quite a lot. And we all know he's really the longest term ever value investor out there.
Yeah, I think it's a soothsayer point, which I think was Kingsley was saying just now about getting out from tech and eventually moving into value and growth kind of value stocks later.
But up next, the big question, can hotels survive until 70% of the population has been vaccinated without interstate travel? So stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.